Hello and welcome to Two Old Guys on the Back Porch. I am Steve Scotch, and we have the lovely and talented Kat, that's C-A-T, crashing the party. Kat, what's going on?
Hey, how y'all doing? We've been found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all your other premier podcast platforms. Also, it can be found on Facebook and Instagram, and TikTok's still going, so you might find either one of us on there now. Anyway, going to give two shout outs to two towns that are listening to us. The first one is Sunnyvale, California. It is as one of the major cities in California's high tech area known as Silicon Valley. Sunnyvale is the birthplace of video game industry, the former location of Atari headquarters. Our other town is Chattanooga, Tennessee. Chattanooga was made famous by the 1941 song Chattanooga Choo Choo, made famous by Glenn Miller and his orchestra. It's also the home of University of Tennessee at Chattanooga and Chattanooga State Community College. Giving y'all a round of applause.
All right. Alcohol is the magnet that draws us out here to the back porch. If people ask me what my favorite beer is, and that would be an open one, today I'm back on my favorite red ale called Smithwick's. If you like a little color in your beer, try Smithwick's. It's a good one. Kat, what you sipping?
I have a Cosmo tonight. Just feeling like it. Haven't had one in a while. Broke out the cranberry juice and a little Cointreau and vodka.
Ooh, sounds sweet like you, babe.
Thanks, doll.
All right, today we ask the question, who doesn't like a good submarine sandwich? Got the sub roll, stacks of meat, top of cheese, oil and vinegar, whatever way you like it. Of course, the name submarine comes from the resemblance of the roll to the shape of a submarine. Now, subs first became popular in the States, in the northeast part of the country here, thanks to the Italian Americans who owned pizzerias. And they wanted to spice up the menu a little bit. Instead of just pizza, they started offering subs.
Right.
And to me, the best subs as far as meatball subs or Italian subs come from the pizza joints.
Yeah, I would agree.
Because, you know, they got hot, toasty sub rolls. Everything's kind of heated and melted, you know. As far as chain sub shops go, these days, it's not good. We'll start with the worst. Of course, that's Subway. This crappy chain, I mean, it has the word sub in their name, and they can't make a decent sando. I think it was last year they started advertising that they were going to cut the deli meat right in front of you.
Do some slicing right before your eyes.
Why did they do that? I think it's because people were questioning whether those little triangles of meat were even meat at all. Now, Subway, they do have good sub rolls. The bread's
good.
Is like the highlight of the thing, but what goes between it is, it's not happening. The next, to me, worst sub shop we got around here is Jimmy John's. Went in one not too long ago and got a wrap and a bag of chips. The wrap was like 5 inches long. It cost me 13 and some change for a freaking wrap and a bag of chips. And I got the wrap because I've been to Jimmy John's before, and it tastes like nothing. It's just overpriced nothing. But remember, they're fast. They're really fast at Jimmy John's. Maybe they should slow down and make a better sub. Potbelly showed up out here. Have you been to Potbelly yet?
No, Trip has.
Okay. I went in there a couple of years ago. It's good, but it ain't that good. Okay, they want like 18, 20 bucks for a sub, chips, and a drink. And Potbelly's probably on its way out of here if it's not gone already. They're kind of tricky in there. They got all this stuff up on the board. It's like add-ons, but it's all just to add on to the tab. Too pricey for me. We got a few Firehouse sub shops around here. Firehouse, they have a tasty sub. No meat. They don't put anything on it. Very skimpy on the main ingredient, on the main ingredients, but they do support, you know, the firemen. So that's cool. Two old guys on the back porch. Big fans of what, Cap?
Jersey Mike's.
J Mike's. They usually
if
bring
nothing else for the app because it's really easy to work with. I can just hit what we've previously ordered and I'll be there when I get
tappy,
there.
Tappy, pick it up on the shelf and go. They usually bring it every time consistent, right? Yeah. Over and over.
Yeah, I've never really had a bad experience.
Good product, good price. You know, it's that simple. You know, J. Mike subs, hot or cold, probably the best thing we have around here. We don't have a New York deli.
No, I mean, the closest thing we had when we were growing up, I mean, Richmond has grown in its taste and flavors, but back in my day, there weren't a whole lot of options. You either were ordering it from the Pizza Hut, which I did do, or it was the other one.
Pizza Hut
Submarine Joe's. Joe's Submarines. Remember them?
No, I don't.
I do.
I don't. I mean, it would be nice, you know, if you had like a family-owned Sando shop in the neighborhood.
Right.
Go down there.
We do, and you don't like that one.
Oh, Sandando's, whatever. I don't know, but that's
that got the Steve rejection. There's a lot of Steve rejections at this point.
I don't really know
where we can go anywhere now because you've rejected everything.
Well, when we go out of town, we find these places that have awesome sandwich shops,
right?
But around here, nothing. Believe it or not. When we go to Nag's Head, North Carolina, we always hit this place called the Country Deli. I mean, oh my gosh, they got these huge subs that actually taste like something.
Right.
And
they pile it on. That's
you
for sure.
Really can't eat the whole thing.
No.
I mean,
you have to be strategically with that thing. It's either, you know, I'm going to eat half today and the other half tomorrow.
Yeah. I always try to finish it. And then it's like three quarters of the way. It's like regret. It's like, I can't do it. But that's what I'm talking about. You know, really, really good sub sandwiches. You know, some days just a big old sub sandwich just hits the spot.
Oh, and I finally remembered that place, Moe's Sub. Remember Moe's Sub?
Yeah.
Over there in the Regency?
Yeah. Everything comes and goes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's roll right into One Tough, Awesome Lady. It's Toni Morrison, born in 1931 from Lorain, Ohio. Toni Morrison, American novelist and editor. Toni Morrison authored 11 novels, many children's books, 3 plays, and some poetry. She got a BA in English from Howard University and then got her master's at Cornell. Growing up, you know, in the 30s and 40s, her and her family experienced racism, you know, of the worst kind. Not that any kind's not the worst kind. Toni Morrison first found attention with the release of her first novel, The Bluest Eye, that she wrote while she was raising 2 children on her own. That's putting in the work. Second novel, Sula, was nominated for the National Book Award, and her third novel, Song of Solomon, brought her national acclaim.
She, let's see, she graduated, as we said, from Howard. She also got a degree from Cornell University, master's degree in American literature. She was the first African-American woman to be an editor for Random House. And while she was the editor for Random House, she helped a lot of other authors in their, you know, in the editing of their books, like Huey Newton, Angela Davis, boxer Muhammad Ali, writer and poet Henry Dumas. I mean, she's like on the edge of becoming who she could be. I mean,
she really
Wouldn't be another Toni Morrison before Toni Morrison, you know what I'm saying, in the culture that she grew up in.
She played a big role in bringing black literature into the mainstream.
As they say, a black point of view. I mean, she won the Pulitzer Prize for Beloved in 1998, Nobel Prize for Literature in 1993, Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2012.
Very impressive catalog.
And her name, her given name was not Toni, it was Chloe. And when she started going to Howard, she changed it to Toni because people had a hard time saying Chloe for some reason or another.
I don't know. I think you might have mentioned it. Barack Obama presented her with the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Right.
And that makes Toni Morrison one tough, awesome lady. Did we watch anything?
We watched something, and this is one I could not stop watching. That's usually a good sign of something I liked watching. This is a little miniseries. I think I want to say there's 6 episodes. It's called American Primeval, and it's about a mother and son fleeing the past from the East Coast, like Boston area, while they're confronting the freedom and lands and cruelty of the American West. American Primeval was written by Mark Smith and directed by Peter Berg. It's starring Taylor Kitsch and Betty Gilpin. It's set in the 1959 Utah War. The set in 59, as I said, it examines the fight for control of the American West, violent clash between Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Mormons, and the cultures and territory of Utah, center on this big massacre that happened where this big wagon train was coming through. Betty Gilpin's character's on there with her son just trying to get to this small place in California called Crooked Springs. So she gets in with some other Mormons that are part of this wagon train. And what happens is the Mormons have a Mormon militia. Brigham Young is thinking, you know, hey, I'm the governor of Utah. I can make this my own country. I'll just keep those other people from passing through Utah and I'll scare them. And this was a really bad idea because they killed like 70 people. They had a bunch of the Mormon militia and a bunch of Indians. Of course, all the Mormon militia guys all had hoods on while they're trying to whack everybody out. And it was a really good miniseries. It was sometimes hard to watch, like when she gets to the Fort Bridger trading post. It just looks nasty. I mean, there's dead animals everywhere. They're hacking up this. They're doing that. But that's just kind of the way it's, you know, it smelled bad. It looked bad. Of course, there's a bunch of Wild West guys that probably hadn't seen a woman in months, or at least a white woman. And it just literally looked.
Where are the white women at?
Where are the white women at? Oh, they're Mormon and they're all going that way. That's basically what was happening. Anyway, it's really good depiction of what the West was really like. You were sitting there thinking it's all, you know, cowboys and Indians. No, there were other people there that were just trying to make their way to California. And, you know, in some of the situations, I think Taylor and Betty Gilpin's character get themselves into, it's like going from the fire pan into the frying pan into the fire is just like, oh, something else is going to happen. Anyway, and I went to the point where I took out a map and saw where Fort Bridger was, saw where Salt Lake was, and where Crooked Springs is. Anyway, if you just need a quick Western 6-part miniseries, it's like on the top things right now on Netflix. And it's really good. I'm going to say that. Anyway.
All right.
Recommendation, Netflix, American Primeval.
Check it out. Cat needs a shot after that. Throat's a little parched.
It's a little parched.
What do we got?
We have the Sweet Tart shot. It's one part vodka and one part the syrup I made with Sweet Tarts.
Who doesn't like a Sweet Tart?
Yeah, that's kind of, and I had a hard time finding the Sweet Tarts. I think that's one of those things that's kind of going away or harder to find.
You made Sweet Tart syrup?
Yes.
How?
I boiled the Sweet Tarts, half a cup of sugar.
Boiled Sweet Tarts.
Half a cup of sugar, a cup of water.
This looks like it's going to be a sweet one. Down the hatch. Ouch. You know, that's not bad. It stays in the back of your throat, whatever's in there.
It hangs out there.
But it does taste a little bit like a Sweet Tart. There's a little bit in there.
There's a sweet tartness to it.
I don't
it.
Know how much alcohol is in that because it's very sweet. All right. Thank you, Kat, for the Sweet Tart shot.
The Sweet Tart shot.
All right. This week we were bumpered in with a band called the Magnetic Fields. I've heard, I don't know, about this band or all for, I don't know, since they started, I guess, and never really listened to them. They might have been on 120 Minutes at some point way back in the day on MTV. I never listened to them, but I'd heard about them. Formed in 1989, about that, from Boston, Mass.
Boston.
Stephen Merritt, he's like the main character in the Magnetic Fields. Claudia Gonson also has been there, I think, for the beginning. She manages the band, plays piano, vocals, drums. San Duvall, cello and flute. John Wu, guitar and banjo. Chris Ewan on keys and Anthony Krasinski on guitar and vocals. As you can tell, the Magnetic Fields, they incorporate just about every instrument ever made.
Synthesizers, guitars, ukulele, banjo, accordion, cello, mandolin, flute, xylophone, and a maxophone?
I don't know. They released, it was 1999. It was called 69 Love Songs.
Right.
Which I think kind of people opened their eyes and ears to this band. It was like a 3-volume concept album. Of course, it had 23 songs on each one.
Right. That just tells you have balls. Anytime a band comes out with like a double album, usually
they've been around a while.
They've been around a while. And,
this is right out the gate.
The music company's like, yeah, that's great. You sure you can't do this in 2 albums? No, we're doing a double album. Like, I think,
So they went triples.
No, we're not just doing a double. We're tripling this stuff.
All right. So I heard a song somewhere by them on, I don't know, Sirius or something. I don't know where it was. And so I started listening to them. And it's kind of an acquired taste. And I kind of acquired the taste because when you first start listening to the Magnetic Fields, you think maybe or maybe not, because Stephen Merritt, he's not the best singer that you've ever heard, but they definitely chose the right name for this band, because when you start listening to them, they kind of pull you in like a magnet. The dude's lyrics, it's like you're waiting to hear what the next line's going to be.
Right.
He makes you listen to the lyrics. And as we've said on this podcast many times, listen to the words. I know Matt, the lead singer from the National. I don't know him personally, but I know he has to be a major fan of this band because I can tell he's been influenced by the magnetic fields. In 2010, they released a documentary film called Strange Powers. And the magnetic fields, they are strange, but it's a good strange.
If you want to check them out, March 29th, they'll be in Pittsburgh, PA at the Carnegie Music Hall.
Still going. Love it. Check out the magnetic fields wherever you get your music. I want to thank everyone for hanging out on the back porch. We'll see y'all down the road.
See ya.